You're tuned into Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition. The powerful Kindred and Family Soul, All My People, featuring Freeway playing in the background. And we're coming back with more of the very best in not only Neo Soul, but information that can help you and your folks become informed as you make decisions that impact our community. You know, there's a study out by Pew, I believe, that suggests that small businesses, upwards of 80% of small businesses employ approximately 90% of all workers. So we have to keep in mind that these large box stores, Costco, and I like Costco. I like his business model a lot, a great deal. Walmart, certainly, and the rest, you know, there's quite a few others that I'm not naming, don't employ as many workers as you would suspect they do. So, you know, keep in mind, or keep that in mind when you're going shopping. You know, you go in these little small mom and pop type operation, and you tend to look askance. You know, your nose is stuck up in the air because they don't offer the best price points. You know, price points that you used to from Chinese manufactured goods that, you know, a big box store like Walmart might import. But you have to note that those people that are working there, you know, the proprietor and certainly the help, you know, the clerical help, cashier, that sort of thing. More than likely, those people live in a community, so we have to be mindful of the conscientious as we go about our business. You know, conducting commerce. 76 degrees here in Brooklyn, New York, 6:35 a.m. on Monday, June 19, 2017. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a relaxing one. Didn't hear from my child. Quite concerned. Did call him a couple of times. Didn't call his mother. And I don't want to get into that on the air. But, you know, typically, if he's with his grandmother, he'll call dad on Father's Day. So, you know, I'll chalk that one up to you know who. So, we're expecting some rain. Humidity is about 86 degrees later on. We haven't had none. It was threatening to rain all week, all weekend, from Friday to Sunday. I didn't water anything. I have a lovely garden. And it's kind of lush, it's looking good. So I didn't water anything because I was anticipating the rain. It was relatively hot. We expect the heat to go up to 84 today, at any rate. And, you know, or 85. And it's saying it's going to rain again today, but I don't know. Given that it's supposed to rain since Friday, and we haven't gotten any of it. So, the current administration, we've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, seems to be imploding under the weight of its own incompetence, and we knew this, that was bound to happen. I mean, it was inevitable. Charles Blow has a fascinating article in the New York Times today about impeachment, but there's some rumor afloat that Chump the Brain Dead comic Carnival Barker is going to resign before that. He actually wants out. That's what they're suggesting. He stayed at Camp David the first time, which is up in Frederick County, Maryland, in Catalchin State Park. And so the feds have carved out a huge buffer zone for the resident, the presidential villa up there. And he stayed there for the first time in his short presidency, huddled apparently by himself. He didn't, if he had advisors, it wasn't noted, nor was the press corps, from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, allowed to visit, to ask questions, to interview, or any of those things. I, you know, this is such an unusual administration. you know, and I think part of the problem with us as journalists, as broadcasters, as observers, is that we're trying to normalize that which is abnormal. It's an abnormal administration, for sure. So the things that normally hold true for a president or any elected leader certainly do not hold true in this particular case. But I was reading a rumor, and you have to be careful these reports on, you know, because it's not from a reputable source. It's from somebody named Palmer, the Palmer Report. So I've never heard of this. It's somebody's blog. So they're not going to be held to the same. Even my blog, admittedly, you know, I'm not held to the same journalistic standings as someone writing for a mainstream publication such as The Atlantic or The New Yorker or New York Times, certainly Washington Post, all the publications which I read. So I'm not so much into conservative or liberal. You know, I believe that if the information is coming from a reputable source, I'm definitely going to write, you know, read it. But you know, a Breitbart and the Palmer Report, you know, whether left or right, I'm not going to read those things simply because they're not going to hold themselves to the highest journalistic standards and engage in a lot of speculation and scurrilous attacks and reporting things that can't be fact-checked. So you have to be careful. In this case, I'm careful too, because I haven't been able to confirm that this is indeed the case. I know there were or was a report out about Trump the Brain Dead, Comic Carnival Barker, yelling at the television in a little room off of his office where he often hosts guests. And certainly had a 60-inch television, flat screen, I'm sure, installed in there so that he can rail at the news, I guess, while he's gulping down his Whopper or whatever you call McDonald's biggest offering, because I understand that he's a huge fan. With an emphasis on huge of fast food. So that's the story. I suspect though that it's true. You know, simply because what he's done over the weekend is certainly out of character, and we're not saying that to normalize this guy, but simply that he would typically be spending the weekend at Bedminster, the golf course that he owns. In New Jersey, I guess because it's too hot now to go to Mar-a-Lago, which is down in Florida. In Florida, this time of the year is extraordinarily oppressive. So, you know, earlier, well, not earlier this year, earlier last year, we were talking a great deal about what we want to do here at East New York. And those that want to know a little more about what we do, go to our website, www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. And we were thinking about, we're certainly going to keep a brick and mortar presence in Brooklyn. That's for sure. So we've decided that we're going to do that. We're looking now, not so much for a capital expense, but if we can, we will, because as you may well suspect, the New York real estate market is white hot, even in Brooklyn. So even the commercial buildings that we would be looking at in East New York, you know, which is used to be an industrial area, you know, except Pickens Avenue, which, you know, going down towards the Queens Line, it has always been. You know, it's been difficult, you know, because, you know, everybody has expanded out from Manhattan and downtown Brooklyn, pushed all those people out in Fort Greene that have been there for decades, grandparents and great grandparents now that lived there through the 40s and 50s and 60s as their children fled to the suburbs. I actually wrote a piece about this called Our People. I believe I talked about this in a few other shows about how we fled these areas. And these people stayed. Now they're being shoved out by unaffordable rent, unscrupulous landlords, and blight and crime. So they've taken back a lot of downtown. So you can't get down there. LB's used to be right off Flatbush Extension between some landmarks down there. And when they built the Barclay Center, right over the Long Island Railroad terminates there, Atlantic Avenue. Real estate prices in that area really shot up. I don't know if any ball players live in that area. I doubt it, seriously, even though it's nice. They have some beautiful, absolutely gorgeous brownstone, sandstone, flagstone, brick buildings in that area. But we were looking to move out. We've been there for quite a while, over 20 years, Geralman Street. We're looking to move further deeper into Brooklyn, like towards the Queens Line, which would be, like East New York, our namesake. And we were looking for, a reasonably, not reasonably priced, certainly we don't think that we're going to find a reasonably priced, but an industrial building, old factory or something like that, that's in reasonable condition. And we were going to just simply convert it to class C and B office space and put our studio in there because, at the end of the day, it's still Brooklyn. It's still New York. And people will still come no matter where we're at. And then we're looking to expand our film writing and production. Forgive me, it's very early in the morning. Our film writing and production, we're going to keep it in Brooklyn, but we're going to, we want to expand to either Puerto Rico or Virgin Islands. I think it'll be a good look for us. And actually, I was doing some research on the sea, because I have a love-hate relationship with Puerto Ricans. They're very nationalistic, and they stick together, at any rate, without launching into a whole bunch of broadsides regarding Puerto Ricans, I know a lot of them. One is my instructor and has been for years, and he has always identified himself as white. But this video that I found, as a matter of fact, I'm going to find, I don't have time this morning, probably later on when I get to class, I'm going to find this video. And it has, I don't know how to describe it, but it has a scene where they're doing some African rhythms. The guy is, the narrator, or the guy that comes out first, is clearly black. Yeah, I mean, there's no ambiguity. So this, and then I said, there's a guy that hosts a radio show. I don't know if he still hosts this radio show. He's been there for years. He used to come on after Earl Caldwell, when Caldwell still had the Chronicles on. And then he followed him. Excellent, excellent show. And I used to watch him all the time, or listen to him, rather, all the time. But he always said this about, the Afro or the African influence in Puerto Rico, because, you have these Puerto Ricans running, I'm pure Puerto Rican. What is pure Puerto Rican? What does that mean? I had a girl in my class years and years and years ago when I was still doing a secondary school thing, and they were Puerto Rican, and oh my God, talking about nationalistic nationalism and ignorance, So at any rate, then they had this other big black guy, and he was running around in there, when they were, it's just an interesting documentary, but they were playing the kungas and the timbales and, all these drums, and, a lot of the people, they were clearly black, or African, not Africanist, and, you know, African from the diaspora, you know, but, you know, for, so the point that I'm trying to make, boys and girls, is that, you know, you have a lot of and I don't know why I got off on this, but it just, I guess it really, you know, we always, Africans in the diaspora, for some reason, and I don't know whether it's culture, it probably is culture, you know, we always try to find a way to flee our blackness, our blacktitude, our nigritude, as they used to say. And I believe that's a large part of the problem. We're not proud. We're not happy to be black or to be African. We want to be European, you know. And this brings to mind something else that happened. But let me, if you will bear with me for a second, let me take a break before I do this, because I want to talk about something that also occurred on the weekend. Two big legal cases. And put them in perspective, certainly couple them with my current line of thought. Looking for a multimedia management company that can manage media service products in the next multimedia product? Let Exclusive Management take media service and products to the next level. At Exclusive Management, we can produce a post-production project into a finished product. Rewrite scripts, holes, blurs, and spots at a tight, hot moment. Alignment that flows smoothly. And we're back here at Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition, with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman. 75 degrees outside in 6:51 a.m. 6/19/2017. Humidity is 89%. Winds out of north-northwest at 9 miles an hour. So we do expect rain, and I hope so, because my poor garden is parched. And it needs some rain, or I'm going to have to go out there and water it later on. So anyway, before the break, we were talking about two cases, the Cosby case and the Philando Castile case. And I want to frame them within the context of talking about our expansion to one of the territories that the United States owns in the Caribbean. I just like the Caribbean. I absolutely love vacationing there, especially in the wintertime, man. You want to get a break from this New York weather, and it's frigid. And beyond that, I don't know. You know, I'm stupid like this. I went to graduate school in Buffalo. Now, you talk about New York being cold. I can remember walking across the commons at Buffalo State College, where I did my master's, in April, and it was a squall. I kid you not, man. I mean, the snow was, it was in April. This is in April. So, you know, you talk about being cold in Brooklyn, or, you know, down in New York City. Buffalo, which is the second largest city in New York State, gets beyond cold. It's up there on a Great Lake, like its sister cities, Pittsburgh and Erie and Cleveland, all these cities up there, Detroit. You know, these cities all sit on lakes or water, and it's cold ordinarily in these cities. And you get that coupled with the lake effect, and it becomes something to behold. So so we had a Philando Castile verdict acquitting the officer of murdering him, even though we've seen it streamed live. Another case is Don't Believe Your Lying Eyes. We've seen it being streamed live, and their concerns were, before I get into the concerns of the jury was composed of seven or eight white people and two black people. So at this point, I stopped pulling out what little hair I had left as to how we as a people always want to be fair. And this is part of what happens, jury nullification. In the O.J. Simpson case, you know, and white people couldn't believe that blacks were celebrating the acquittal of an alleged murderer. And no, it wasn't the acquittal of an alleged murderer that we were celebrating. We were celebrating a high-profile victory in a justice system that doesn't work for black people. That's why we have Black Lives Matter. And for those of us who would say all lives matter, I would say, well, tell that to the cops that are killing us on a routine basis, you know, because I didn't know that getting stopped for a traffic infraction could lead to summary execution in any place but a banana republic. So for us to assume that it's normal for the police to stop you and that stop to escalate into your death is absurd, ludicrous, and you have to be some kind of special stupid to believe that we should sit around and allow this to continue to happen, especially when blacks play a role in their own oppression. Because how can these two Negroes have gotten on this jury and voted to acquit this guy of murder, not even listening to the evidence, seeing all of it? And this is why I'm glad, as a lawyer, as a author, as a social scientist, I have never been on a jury, because I would never, I mean, if there is even a shred of doubt, I am not voting for an acquittal, you know, in the case of, you know, something like this. It I can never have me, and that's probably why I will never be on a jury. So at any rate, then we have the Cosby case, and the jury was hopelessly deadlocked. So Dr. William H. Cosby managed to escape that one for the time being. The Montgomery County Prosecutor's Office, I don't know what they call the prosecutor in Pennsylvania, state's attorney or whatever, vowed to retry Cosby. I don't know if they're going to do it or not, or that was just a bluff, you know, because at some point it gets extremely expensive, even for a small municipality with, you know, with considerable resources. Cosby has more. Let's keep it real. Cosby has more. And if they retry him, he's going to come back with his legal team, who is black, you know. So, and I appreciate that, because I didn't appreciate some of the things that Cosby said to the African-American community over the last 20 or 30 years. You know, a lot of it was misplaced. And it was just gratuitous. And I think that if you're going to castigate us in public, then at least you need to do it with facts. And he didn't. A lot of it was just really gratuitous. It was really ugly. And I didn't appreciate it. I know a lot of other black progressives, black academicians, and, you know, persons of note in our community didn't appreciate it either. So I wasn't on the support Cosby bandwagon. But I don't believe, from a legal perspective, that the case should have ever have been brought, simply because the contract that was offered for him to testify in the civil trial should have been upheld, where the prosecutor said that if you testify, you give a deposition for earlier civil case, we cannot use that deposition in a criminal procedure. So the judge was dead wrong in this case, and this illustrates a lot of what's wrong with not only the criminal but the civil justice system in this country. You have these judges that are wholly inept, you know, often venal, and sometimes corrupt, you know, and they're weighing you know, a case where, you know, your fortune, or in some cases, your liberty could be at stake. And, you know, they often side with, you know, big business or, you know, persons that have more resources than you. So we're going to talk a lot more about this next week. The Cosby case and the Philando Castile case, because I didn't link, you know, that with the Puerto Rican issue, but I want to link it, because something that really bothers me about people fleeing their heritage, it really is. And so we're going to come back next week for more right here on Marketing Pulpit International. Yours truly, Dennis Shipman. Have a great week.